Welcome to this week's podcast of Kicking It with Kidneys with your host, Cindy Barclay. Hey, Cindy, take it away.
And welcome. Receiving a diagnosis of chronic kidney disease, specifically stage 5, and undergoing dialysis can be a life-altering event. But it doesn't mean your life has no quality. Every day, thousands of people are meeting the challenge to manage this disease and live their very best life. Today, we have two individuals that will share their journey that may be qualitatively different, but yet the physical and psychological changes are relatively the same. Melissa Swarab and Professor Ivy Jenkins are joining us today to share how chronic kidney disease changed their lives. We'll also discuss the challenges that they face and what helps them manage the day-to-day complexities of life. Well, our KIWK team is back in the house. We have BJ Simone, Maria Jimenez, and of course, Rita Williams. Now, BJ, what is the word on the street?
Well, hi, everyone. Our word on the street today will show a few of the faces of people who are living with kidney disease, and we'll just get a quick glimpse of how they cope with everyday life.
When I found out I needed dialysis, I was kind of depressed.
At first, it was a shock because it happened all at once.
My age, I was like kind of young. I'm like, and I'm thinking about my life as I know it was over.
A little confused because I didn't know what dialysis was.
Is this what's going to take me out? Am I dying,
I was real upset because it wasn't something I wanted to do. It was something I knew I had to do.
I have met a lot of patients who are on every form of dialysis possible, patients who have had transplants, failed transplants, second transplants. I've met so many people, and the people who do well are the people who are determined to make the best of this. You know what? You can't change it. You got to live with it. So you try to live with it as best you can.
Honestly, I would encourage anybody that's on dialysis, if you want to travel, they make it so easy for you nowadays. It's amazing that you can just do about anything and you never have to feel like just because I'm on dialysis, you're restricted. You're not.
My advice for other patients is first, be the captain of your ship. It's your body, it's your treatment. Be the captain. The doctors, the nurses, they're there to help you, to give you information, but you are the final decision maker. And in order to make a good decision, you need to learn as much as you can about the modality that you choose.
Well, one of my favorite poets, William Butler Yeats, wrote, "There are no strangers here today, only friends we have not met." Our guests today are longtime acquaintances with chronic kidney disease and are here to give us a bird's eye view about their journey, a journey that most of us would find inconceivable. Professor Ivy Jenkins obtained his PhD in education while coping with the ambiguities and challenges of kidney disease. Melissa Swarab has a finance service background, which includes database analysis, and she legitimately understands the financial limitations associated with any type of chronic illness. And by the way, Melissa also breeds miniature, long-haired. What type of dogs are these, Melissa?
It's dachshunds.
Dachshunds, okay.
Wiener dogs. Most people know them as wiener dogs.
Okay. So if you're in the market for another mouth to feed, I think you should give her a call. So without further ado, let us welcome Professor Ivy Jenkins and Melissa Swarab.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Okay. I think we'll start out with Rita. Why don't you ask our guests some questions and hopefully they can shed some light on renal failure.
Sure. Well, welcome, guys. As our panelists, you are the captain of your ship. So my first question is, how has your lifestyle changed since being diagnosed with chronic kidney disease? Can you share a little bit about that with us?
Well, from what I found out, I'll start this off, is that it affects everybody differently. And some people do better the day before dialysis. Some people do better the day of dialysis. I'm one of those people, I feel great the day before dialysis and feel horrible the day of dialysis, but that's me. But it changed my life in that, you know, 3 days a week, I'm pretty much useless. I'm exhausted. I sleep a lot. And so I have to plan everything on the days that I'm not on dialysis. It turned my whole world upside down when I found out, because I thought it was the end of the world. But it's, you know.
So Melissa, what caused your renal failure? What caused you to go into renal failure?
So I actually had my gallbladder had a stone in it. I didn't know this. And when I finally went to the ER, they said, had I waited another day, I wouldn't have made it. I had pancreatitis. My gallbladder was already gangrenous. So I went in septic, pancreatitis, everything. And I had taken my metformin that morning because I'm also diabetic. And because I had the metformin still in my stomach, when they went in to take my gallbladder out, the dye they use, it was too much for my kidneys to handle it. So they shut down in the hospital. I was in there for 15 days. They wanted to make sure my kidneys were starting to recover before they let me go home. And they said, as long as I kept, you know, going to the bathroom, urinating, that my kidneys would recover. And about a year later, they were almost back to normal, but I think it was just their last breath. They quit again. And that's when it was over for me. And I was in stage 3 and stage 4 for quite a while. And then stage 5 came rather abruptly, and they needed me to be on dialysis.
Ivy?
As Melissa said, it was a total upending of my entire existence. I was really involved in a lot in the community and a lot of social organizations I was a part of, as well as working and going to school at the same time.
Yeah.
And it just changed everything. I mean, I went from being highly productive and active all the time to basically just sitting still the majority of my time. And it pretty much put a pause on everything that I had planned. And, you know, and then that's when you just kind of have to deal with it and accept it as for what it is and just go ahead. Like the gentleman said in the intro, you have to be the captain of the ship and plot your own course according to how you can plot that course based on your circumstances.
Good afternoon, Mr. Jenkins and Ms. Swarov. Thank you again for joining us and being a face to the whole disease process and showing the community that they can overcome this. My question to you guys is, what was the biggest hurdle that you guys had to overcome in order to manage this condition or disease process?
For me, it was just accepting the diagnosis and the mental and emotional trauma that came from getting that diagnosis. And I think that was the biggest hurdle to overcome.
What did you do
for
that?
But the first thing I did is that being a person of faith, you know, I sent a lot of email, you know? So, I mean, I prayed and just prayed for just mental and emotional stability, because once I got beyond that, I could see how I needed to operate and the things that I needed to do. And it got a lot clearer once I got over that mental and again, the emotional aspect of it, because it was harsh at first. I mean,
so you're saying that initially you felt like maybe this is not real, that maybe this is not true, and it's not happening to you. Right.
I mean, it came out of left field. It really did. I was at work one evening, had gone to lunch, went home and was feeling bad. And like that next day, I was still feeling bad. And I told my wife, I said, I need to go to the emergency room. And I went to the emergency room and they tried to triage me and they couldn't get a blood pressure on me. So they took me back into one of the triage rooms in the ER and hooked me up to a bigger monitor. And my blood pressure had shot up to like 220 over 240 over 220, something like that. It was crazy, astronomical numbers, but I didn't feel anything.
Yeah, but were you previously diagnosed with hypertension? Did you have high blood pressure?
I did. And what I did not know was that I also had FSGS.
Okay.
I had no idea.
Explain that. People don't know what that means. Explain that to them.
I'm trying to figure out the best way to explain that. It's a chronic kidney disease. Mm-hmm. My grandmother actually had it, and I have an uncle who has it now, who's on dialysis and diabetic in Louisiana. But I'm not diabetic, but I just had FSGS. Basically, it's where your kidneys basically lock down. Mm-hmm. And when your kidneys lock down, your blood pressure shoots up, the vessels in the kidneys rupture, and they cause scar tissue. Mm-hmm. And there's no repairing that.
No.
You know, it's pretty much one and done.
And FSGS is focal segmental glomerulosclerosis.
Mm-hmm. Good to have an RN in the house.
How did they diagnose that? Like, what test did they do to diagnose that?
You know what? They did a biopsy. Mm-hmm. Then basically came back and told me I had FSGS, and I'm looking at him with this blank look on my face. He goes, "You never heard of that, have you?" I said, "No." Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. when I called my mom and told her what the diagnosis was, she goes, "Well, that's the same thing that mama has." Mm-hmm. My grandmother. I'm like, "What?" She goes, "Yeah, it may be." And then I found out it's very possible that it was hereditary.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was just the luck of the draw. It missed everybody, 4, 5, 6, 7, 10, 11 different people in the family. Yeah. And I was the one. So out of everyone, it's just me, her, and my uncle.
Ms. Swarp, how did Melissa manage this?
Well, I had the same shock as, you know, the professor did. I just, I shut down. I go internal. And so I don't reach out to anybody, study. And so, you know, I had to struggle at the beginning because the doctor would tell me to do one thing and I would do it and nothing would happen. It would actually make it worse. I was also 360 pounds at that point.
Wow.
And so I was in a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. I was in bad shape. My blood pressure was, you know, 220 over 100 something, but I was so anemic that I needed blood transfusions and they couldn't give them to me because my blood pressure was too high. I looked like I was goth, you know. I had no color in my face at all. Lips were the same color as the rest of me, which was white. And oh my gosh. Anyway, I had to basically do my own research. So while I was in the hospital and while I was in bed or in a wheelchair and not being able to even take care of myself, I read peer-reviewed journals and information. Stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'm allowed to mention it, but nutritionfacts.org was a great source of information because you can have any medical condition and look up. They'll have 5-minute video clips on things you can do. And it really turned my life around with that because even if, you know, not Rita, but at the beginning, my original dietitians would tell me to, you know, do this, this, and this, and I would do it. And then I would add more and add more and it wasn't working for me. I actually went vegan for a little while and I started getting my anemia better. I started losing weight. Eventually the past year I had to do a gastric sleeve, but that's another story because I needed to get on the transplant list and I had to be under certain weight.
We'll talk about that as well. Yeah.
So nutritionfacts.org, I started reading and it gave me inspiration because I saw results. Because the nice thing about being with Quality Dialysis is that every month you get to see your blood work. So you can do one thing for a month, look at the blood work, tweak it, try it the next month and look at the blood work and really learn how your body processes the different things to know what works for you. And that really helped me because then it gave me something to focus on and it becomes just another challenge. And we all have challenges and we learn to overcome them. Yeah.
Yes.
Welcome. And it is an honor to meet both of you guys. My question is, what coping skills would you suggest are most helpful for people who are living with chronic kidney disease?
I'll take it. For me, it was just staying busy. After I got over the initial shock of it all, I just started using that time, that downtime to do, like as Melissa said earlier, I was doing research. I actually went back to school full time in a hybrid format to finish my degrees. And I had, you know, I just kept going, but and I started traveling, and as in the opening video, they made travel so easy with the coordinators. Everywhere I went, my treatments were already set up. I mean, my wife and I went to Hawaii, and I'm on Maui in a dialysis center for a couple of hours, and walk out the front door and cross the street, I'm on the beach. So you just stay busy. I mean, that was the main thing, is just staying busy, occupy your mind. Because when you have that idle time, it's your imagination starts to run with you. You start thinking about those doomsday theories and the worst part of dialysis and all that stuff. So I spent a lot of time reading and a lot of time just staying busy, you know, going out fishing, going to the beach, all kinds of stuff. You name it, I did it. I even did some voiceover work while I was on dialysis.
You know, Professor Jenkins, a lot of people are not as astute and as fortunate as you are. You said the key words, education, being busy. A lot of people feel like when they go on dialysis, like it's a death sentence. And, you know, they're not educating themselves. They're not doing a lot of them say that they can't do it. I don't know. You give us a totally different analysis of things. You know, you give us a picture that I'm not accustomed to.
Right. I went through the Kidney Foundation, looked at all their stuff. I even found a group. It's called the Dialysis Scholarship Fund. Mm-hmm. And started working with them. And a lot of my school was paid for by them. I mean, scholarships.
Wow. So they're resources. They're actually resources out there. A lot of resources. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have, people, to find, you have to look for them, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have to look for them.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are not going to be under the umbrella of, you know, the Kidney Foundation. A lot of them are just private entities where somebody in their family may have had, was on dialysis and they started a fund. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of little organizations like that.
Yeah.
That I found out there. It's just getting the information and applying it and using it. And execution is key.
Mm-hmm. Right. And when I talk to our patients, I always tell them dialysis is just part of you.
Right.
It's not all of you. The rest of you, like you said, travel, do what you want to do, go do fun stuff. It is just part of you. It is not all of you. It doesn't define you.
It's what you do, and it's not what who you are.
Right.
Yeah. So Melissa, what are some of your recommendations?
Well, I still tried to do everything that I did before, and you can't. And so my biggest thing was I had to learn to pick my battles. You know, there's that whole spoon thing, you know, where you only have so many spoons, but I don't think that it's so weird to say it like that. But, you know, 4 hours, three times a week, you've got to make room for this. And, you know, you prep before and you prep after. So it's actually more than that. But I had to learn to pick my battles, and I had to learn to focus more on myself, because I was trying to do things for so many other people and, you know, still try to show dogs and still try to travel. And I mean, like in my car, and, you know, I couldn't go to a 3-day dog show because I was going to be on dialysis. So, you know, and those were hard to schedule. So I just had to stop, but I had to pick my battles. I had to learn how to cook for myself and cook better and, you know, lower my salt. And we just don't eat out anymore. Mm-hmm. But those kinds of things are the things that I had to learn the hard way. And I do much better now. And I try not to get on Facebook too much. I don't get to be with friends and family and go out as much, because then it's tempting to eat stuff I shouldn't eat. So I tend to have them over here more. Like I said, pick your battles. I don't go out. I have them over. And of course, with COVID, that kind of became a problem. But, you know, pick your battles. Learn where your limitations are. Just like with anybody, you know, we each have our own things, and you just learn to work around them. And it becomes something that's, you wouldn't want to wish it on anybody else, but it's okay, you know, and you get through it.
Those are some wise words, Melissa. Like you said, pick your battles. So my question for you guys is, how did chronic kidney disease affect your relationship with your family and your friends? Can you share a little bit about that?
And don't forget the financial part of it, because I'm sure that's major. Okay.
Right.
Yeah, I had to, like, you know, my family's a big, they love to eat out. They think that, you know, burger and cheeseburger and fries is, you know, healthy as long as they don't eat all the fries. And it's, you know, you can't anyway. I had to learn that I had to ignore those things and always bring stuff with me that I could snack on, so that I didn't fall into the trap of, you know, eating stuff that the next time I go on dialysis, I had to have, you know, 5 kilos removed instead of, you know, one. Mm-hmm. So those kinds of things limited my ability to go out with my friends and family for those kinds of things. But you learn to adapt, like I said, by bringing snacks and stuff like that.
Accountability. That was great.
Yeah. And, you know, as far as what I could do with my family, you know, they traveled more than I do now. But my family used to travel a lot. At first, I didn't think I could do that. And then I became the traveling guy at Quality Dialysis. So, you know, we went all kinds of places. I even went to the Caymans. It changed, you know, my relationship with my family, because the conversations, you don't want to depress people. And so you tend to, like, I went internal with it. And so they knew I had dialysis, and they knew on certain days of the week not to call me because I wouldn't answer. But, and then the schedule would change and they'd call on the wrong days anyway. But, you know, so they learned to manage when to call me, and they learned that certain days I just am not going to be awake, because it really, dialysis wears me out. not everybody, but for me, the dialysis day, I'm out the rest of the day. So I'm quiet 3 days a week, and then I'm chatterbug the rest. So,
in my experience, I had many of the same experiences that you just explored, but my wife and I we don't have any kids. So we brought the fun to every event. And of course, you know, everybody loves a winner. And when you're in those times when things are not looking like they're winning, you start to see people wane off and people start to drift away. And all those folks that used to call and come by and was always at the house week in, week out, they kind of disappeared when they found out, you know, about my dialysis situation. And we really got a chance to find out who was really on the team. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the biggest changes in the relationships. It also brought my wife and I a lot closer together, because during that time, I was really dependent upon her. I found out that you can have the benefit of the kindness of strangers. Quality dialysis was a life savior for me, because I started out in a center and I
tell me about the center. I mean, was there any difference between, so he got home. So Professor Jenkins, you got dialysis in a center and you got dialysis at home. Can you briefly explain the difference and how you felt?
Well, I felt like a number in a center.
Okay.
Because the unit that I was going to, I was on nocturnal. Mm-hmm. So there, I would go in at like 6 o'clock and get out at like, I think it was like 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning. And there was normally, on average, there were maybe 14 to 16 patients. There was two nurses and a charge nurse to cover all those patients. And as you may well know, as you all know, the situations when the patients are cramping and all that kind of stuff, all the little complications that you go through during a treatment, three people can't cover that in a 16-pod unit. And
yeah,
it was horrible. It really was.
Yeah. So you wanted something different for yourself.
Yeah. That's exactly what I wanted. I mean, I was in there one night. I never could fall asleep in there. And the night I fell asleep, I woke up, and the first thing I thought about was the scene from the movie The Matrix, when Neo woke up and saw the people hooked up on the side of the wall. And I got home, and it was like right before Christmas. I told my wife, I said, there has to be something better.
Yeah.
And she was like, let's explore and see what we see. And lo and behold, that day, Christmas Eve, as a matter of fact, a dialysis commercial came on. And then about a week later, this lady showed up at my house. I think her name was Cindy Barkley.
Oh, my.
And we had a great, I don't even remember doing any paperwork and talking about dialysis, because we had a good time. But I ended up going with Quality, and it made all the difference. Because when I was in the center, I would just go in, get treated, come home, and do nothing. Mm-hmm. And it's a difference being in your own home.
Yes.
Being around your surroundings. Because like I said, when I woke up that night, I woke up expecting to be in my house. But I was, you know, and it kind of threw me off for a little while. But when I got with you guys, it made all the difference in the world. I can truly say I would not have done as much as I have done in education if it had not been for Quality Dialysis. I would have stopped. I know.
The home dialysis. Yes. Yeah.
You know, it makes a huge difference when I can get off of treatment and go and lay in my bed and rest, get up, you know, 4 or 5 hours later and go and do what I do. You know, I was teaching classes at night at that time.
Yeah.
So, and that was all made possible just by doing dialysis at home, being in the comfort of my own house, you know,
and
made my wife a lot more comfortable too, because she could just walk by and peek in the door and see me and, you know, versus coming to pick me up at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Oh my gosh. That was horrific. Melissa, what are your experiences with have you been in a center before?
Yes.
Versus home.
Yeah, basically when I travel, you know, we would go in center. And so, I actually went to a couple of places run by the same company a half an hour apart, because we were in transition to one place to another, and completely different. I mean, I wish people were more consistent at the facilities.
Yeah.
One person for every, you know, 5 or 6 people. And yeah, you feel like, you know, you hope you get the guy that can stick people. Otherwise, if you don't, you got to wait for that guy. And then, you know, in the hospital, though, I had the worst experience of them all. I swear they were trying to kill me. And I remember one time going into the hospital And my nurse was supposed to be at my house like four to six hours later for dialysis. And I was still in the hospital. And they were like, well, you're going to probably be admitted and we'll have dialysis for you here. And I said, absolutely not. I'm going home and my nurse is going to be there and I'm going to have dialysis at home. And they told me that if I left, I was going to be AMA. And I was adamant that I didn't care at that point. My white blood cell count was like 23,000. And they're like, you need to be admitted. And I'm like, I'm not being admitted. So I actually called my kidney doctor and I was like, you know me, you've known me for 5 years. Have I ever, ever gone home and not gone back if it got worse? That's how bad I didn't want dialysis in the hospital, that I wanted my quality dialysis nurse at home, because I trust him. I've had him for almost 6 years now. And same nurse the whole time. I've still got one fistula. He takes care of it. And you don't get that in a dialysis center. You know, you get who you get when you get there, and you hope you get there early enough to get the same guy, but you don't know.
Yeah. I just want to say that the modalities, as far as in-center versus home, there's a prerequisite for that. And you must have what we call private insurance for that, you know, some type of group healthcare plan. Everybody is not fortunate enough. However, there's home dialysis training for patients that want to have, you know, that autonomy to take their life back and to have that treatment around, you know, incorporated into their everyday life. So I just kind of want to say something about the fact that everybody's not able to get the home dialysis, but you guys, you read, you actually are active and participate in your own care. So that is a plus.
That's the key.
It is.
Ms. Swerb, what changes based off of your experiences in the healthcare field, in healthcare industry, what changes do you think that there are that need to be made to help patients that are in your situation?
When I first got into this, I didn't know what was right, wrong, or the procedures or anything like that. And I think some of the biggest things that would have helped me even early on would have been to know what the right way is to do dialysis, because every nurse does it a little differently. And I think there's right ways. And there's people that take shortcuts. I've seen it. And, you know, I don't think there's enough, I guess, training on some of the nurses. And I'm not speaking of, you know, the home dialysis. I mean, like in the in-center and the hospitals. And it makes it confusing as a patient to sit there knowing, are they doing this right? Or, you know, when, you know, the transducer falls in the trash can instead of the wrapper and they dig through the trash can to pull it out to stick it on your machine, is that right? And, you know, I learned afterwards, no, it's not right. You don't pull anything out of the trash and stick it on the dialysis machine, but they did that. You know, and I think some classes to know how it's supposed to be done so that we can recognize when it's wrong. And I think everybody should be able to have home dialysis, because, I mean, it really does make a difference. It makes a huge difference. You know, there's patients that take charge of their own lives, and then there's patients that don't. And there's patients that don't care. And I realize that. And then there's patients that try really hard, but they just have bad luck and things happen to them. And, you know, it's depressing to see people struggle. It's depressing to go in center and then people don't want to do it. They just stay home and they skip dialysis. And I really think everybody should have access to some type of dialysis that doesn't make them feel bad to do it. You know, the whole rideshare thing. I watched so many patients that cut dialysis short because their ride was there and they didn't have another option, you know, group ride type things. And I don't know. I think there's so much that can be done to fix some of this and not force people to make bad decisions. And, you know, one of them, like I said, is home dialysis for everybody, but not one where, you know, they make it so that only certain nurses can do it, or they take techs that can do it, because there needs to be a quality in that home dialysis, not RN level, but close. Because when you're at home, the nurse that was pulling the transducer out of the garbage can was in a hospital setting and other people were there. What would she do if she were in a private home and cutting those kinds of corners? What other corners would she cut? And so, you know, I think the quality of the nurse is important. I'll be able to have home dialysis. I don't understand why there's such inconsistency.
Well, they're working on that now, Ms. Sorb. They're really working hard, and CMS and a lot of the doctors now are telling their patients about home dialysis because I think it's best for them. They have that autonomy, and then they are actively participating in their care.
And then you get to really know your nurse too, And like I said, mine, I've almost been with them, 6 years? So it'll be 6 years in December.
Okay. So Professor Jenkins, your thoughts on the subject?
I agree with everything that Melissa just said. But the thing that I think needs to happen more than anything else, they need to fix the reimbursement for companies like Quality Dialysis. Mm-hmm. Every year they're cutting the reimbursement costs, and it's making it hard for companies like Quality Dialysis and those who are providing home dialysis to stay in business and exist. For patients that do not have private insurance, who are on Medicare, they're cutting Medicare reimbursements every year. And it's getting to the point now to where a lot of people are just taking what they can get. They're just accepting it because they have no other outlet. Mm-hmm. But I think there needs to be a big overhaul of the insurance industry as a whole. And I think these companies need to stand true to what they say they are there for, which is the patient, and not their bottom lines. I mean, you need to take care of these people because, I mean, that's what they've, I mean, I'm paying a Medicare deductible right now, and there's still services that I get denied for. Mm-hmm. Even though I have a private payer, Blue Cross Blue Shield as a secondary insurance, there's still always a battle over coordination of benefits and who's going to pay. I don't need to be at a doctor's office and the thing I hear is, well, we're going to have to wait for you to do this procedure. It just happened to me last week, as a matter of fact. I went in for my colonoscopy screening, and that's exactly what happened. Medicare and Blue Cross were fighting over who was secondary and primary. That shouldn't be a worry for a patient. That once it's worked out, that should be what it is. And they should already know who's paying for what. And I think that's the biggest thing right now with insurance for me.
Challenges.
You guys have shared so much information with us, and we are so grateful. But what is a key message that you'd like to share with people who are struggling with chronic kidney disease, as well as those who are at risk for developing the condition?
Well, I personally have since my diagnosis, since the day that I found out, I started preaching to everybody that I came in contact with. Take care of yourself. If your doctor tells you to do something, do that. Blood pressure is a silent killer. It will kill your kidneys in a heartbeat if you're not paying attention to it. Don't assume that it's okay. You don't have to be ill to check your blood pressure, get a blood pressure cuff at the house. It's just certain preventative maintenance things that you have to do. I mean, you're paying to get your car detailed and oil change on your car, same way. Take care of yourself the same way. And the biggest thing is for those people who are on dialysis and who do have kidney disease, don't fight the process. Don't fight against it. Find out what you need to do on a daily basis and do that. Because the time you spend fighting whatever you're being told by your physician, it's time that you've wasted that you'll never get back.
That's right, lost.
You'll never get back. And that's the one thing that we all have that we lose daily that we can never get back.
Yeah. I want to share with our audience, you got a transplant. So how are things? You'll be able to tell us the difference between before and after. How is it now? Man. How are things now?
It's amazing. My wife is telling me to go to sleep now. She's like, you need to just go to bed. Like, what are you working on now? Just go to bed. I'm like, I'm in the middle of writing an article. Like, go to bed. So yeah, it's made all the difference in the world.
Yeah.
And
you're driven. You really are a driven individual.
My job every day is to protect this kidney.
Yeah.
And I've been doing that religiously. I mean, I've kept the weight off because when I first started the whole process of dialysis, I was 357 pounds. And I'm at like 265, and that's what I had to be for. I had to be at 260 for my transplant, so I've been staying there.
So you actually lost weight for the transplant as well?
When they called me and told me that I was on the list, and my goal weight was 260, from that call to like a year and a half later.
Uh-huh.
I was on the list. I was actually on dialysis for 8 years. I was
okay.
on the transplant list for like a year and a half, 2 years.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And when they called me, I got busy. You know,
yeah.
No problem. I was already in a precarious situation because I'm an O negative blood type.
Okay.
Give to anybody, but can only accept O negative.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I knew when that one shot came, that was probably going to be it.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to be ready.
Yeah. Yeah. So you listened and you actually followed.
That's the thing. Don't fight the process.
Yeah.
You have to do what you're told.
And if folks want to live every day, they still have to do what they're told.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You just can't, you know, and you made that very clear today. Okay. Melissa, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I have some of the same things is that, you know, when they tell you, you know, you've got to lose weight, you got to get your blood pressure down, you know, sometimes it takes a major event to make you really listen to that. And so the sad part, you know, I was probably in, you know, stage three and stage four long enough that I probably could have reversed some of that or, you know, delayed that a little bit more. But the thing that I didn't know was, like he said, you had to lose weight. When I decided that, well, you know, I'll check out what it would be like to get on the transplant list. And I was 365 pounds, was that they're like, well, you can't be on the transplant list because you're overweight. Your BMI has to be, you know, down to a certain level. I forget what the BMI actually is. 30 something.
I think it's 30.
32, something like that.
Yeah,
but anyway,
like that.
they told me I had to get down to 232, I think. Mm-hmm. They would start the process at like 240 something, but I couldn't even start the transplant list procedures until I got to at least 240. So, you know, 365 to 240, I tried and tried, but I couldn't, it wouldn't go any further. But they told us, you know, it's too dangerous to have the surgery at your weight, but we need you to have gastric sleeve or bypass to get the rest of the weight off if you want to be on the transplant list. And I'm thinking, if it's not safe enough to get a kidney, how's it safe enough to do bypass? But anyway, I went ahead and with the minimal one and I got the sleeve.
Well, that's something new. I didn't know that you could have a gastric bypass and, you know, still be on dialysis. So that's good to know for those people that want to lose weight.
Yeah,
that are
so
serious
I did the sleeve. They recommended the full bypass, but I did the sleeve because I have a hard time healing. Since I've been diabetic 20 years, I have a hard time healing. I get easy infections. And I thought the minimal amount of work, you know, just to get there. And since I didn't have, you know, 200 pounds to lose to get the rest of the weight off,
yeah.
I went with the sleeve. And the sleeve basically just makes your stomach smaller. And so I got the rest of the weight off and I'm down to 227 as of yesterday. So under the weight that they need. So we're just kind of waiting and I've got, you know, none of my family was a match or didn't qualify. Most of them didn't qualify to be able to give me a kidney. So I had to wait for a perfect stranger. And so I have three strangers that have signed up and just kind of waiting and seeing how that goes. I'm hoping for some news maybe soon. So I would suggest that it's much easier to lose weight when you're not on dialysis, because what I found out is that your kidneys, you know, lose protein every day. And if they lose protein every day and you're anemic all the time, you've got to eat a certain amount of food every day to keep that up. And when you eat more and more of that food, that's more and more calories. It becomes very, very difficult to lose the weight. And you're tired all the time. You know, dialysis takes you down 3 days a week. Well, for me, like I said, everybody's different. And so the exercise isn't there. The energy level isn't there. It's almost impossible. It's almost impossible. So I had to have some help to get the rest of it off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you know, so, you said something very profound earlier. You said that you could have possibly saved your kidney in stage three and four.
Yeah.
But you ignored the warning signs somewhat. Okay.
Well, yeah, I don't know if it's ignored the warning signs or I didn't. Mm-hmm. I thought they would, they recovered once, you know. So
you thought it would happen again.
It might happen again. You know,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. It's like running a yellow light. you know, you
check. That red is coming. Yeah.
Red. Only, you know, that next time I got caught and went through the red light and they were done, you know. So, yeah. There's things you can do to slow it down. There's, you know, I'm going to say eating out is the number one thing that anybody can do that will help save blood pressure and kidneys. There's so much salt in everything right now. Number one thing. If, for example, if you go to Olive Garden and you just get the salad, let's say a tour of Italy and a cheesecake. And that's all you have. That's over 2,000 milligrams of sodium. That's more than a full day of sodium.
Wow.
And I don't think people realize that. You know, there's so much salt and things. They want to reduce the amount of flavor that they use, you know, like, you know, make everything bigger and better. They have to use more salt to get the flavor out of it. Mm-hmm. And you're just killing your kidneys and your heart. Just that one thing. Cook. Stay home. Cook. I think COVID might actually have helped.
Have helped a lot of people. Yeah. But don't you think with all of these, most of the restaurants that I go to now or that I see, basically they've made provisions for that. You can have special vegan diets and vegetarian.
I'm going to tell you, I went to Rally's one time, not Rally's. What was it? Burger joint. The bottomless fries guys that anyway, I can't remember. We went to a burger restaurant. My parents, remember, my mom loves her cheeseburgers and fries. So yeah. I went there and they have a Boca burger. Vegan, vegetarian, vegan, one of those things. Mm-hmm. And it had so much phosphorus and potassium in it that it blew my blood work out for the month.
Okay. So, because
it sounds healthy doesn't mean it is. Mm-hmm. Fresh and
I like that.
The best food.
Mm-hmm. Now, what we started doing is we've been doing for the past 3 months, we've been doing home fresh.
What is that?
That's pre-packed meals. You just a little bit of preparation. It's all fresh ingredients. Yes.
I do the same thing with Green Chef. Green Chef. Yeah,
you guys are so prepared. I mean, you guys are on it.
The Green Chef, we had a coupon for a couple of them free and we tried it out. And, if you send people coupons and they try it and then they get one box, then you get another one free. So, I mean, you can, it's expensive, but if you share the love, you can get some freebies. Those are great. Now neither one of us do the ones that are already made. You heat it in the oven.
No.
And I'm going to tell you the biggest complaint that I have when I give the free ones out, even to my parents, they're like, yeah, but we had to cook. And then there was a cleanup and the cutting boards. And I'm like, but that's the thing. You control the amount of salt. You get the recipe. And when COVID hit, it was a lifesaver. I couldn't get a green pepper to save my life. And I needed a green pepper for my food. Well, Green Chef sends you just the right amount of everything you need. Everything. You don't have to worry about the groceries, except maybe butter or oil. That's it.
And they're portion controlled. So you can't overeat.
Yes. Yes.
if it says it's two servings, that's what they mean.
Yes.
Well, you're sending the message at this show sends all the time. The mission is to get you better. And you're sending that message just by living the life. Okay. Yes. So we're getting ready to kind of wrap up this segment. Now, I think, BJ, you want to say something about the show or what we're doing in the future?
You guys are great captains.
Thank you.
And I'm going to try to be a better captain to my own ship.
Yeah.
But the such an inspiration. Thank you so much. My final thoughts, you know, again, after hearing your stories and your journey, is that we can't predict all the time, and we certainly can't change sometimes the obstacles that we face in life. The only thing that we probably have any real choice over is how we choose to face it.
Correct.
And making the choice to not give up or give in is probably the best first step. Okay. And then for our audience, you know, as always, we want to thank our audience for supporting us. And we ask you to continue to subscribe, to share the word, put it out there, let other people, because, you know, as you watch this show, you can see how much a benefit it is to the community. Visit us at Kicking It with Kidneys, K-I-C-K-I-N, that's no G, kickingitwithkidneys.com. Also, please leave us your comments. And if you have any questions, drop those questions in and we will get back with you. But thank you, everybody.
Maria, you've known Ivy and Melissa, Professor Jenkins. Sorry, I have to give you your accolades for that professor. That's a lot of work.
Wow.
Okay, so you've known both of them for a long time. What say you to them? Absolutely. I'm proud of you both. I just want to say that. And again, thank you for coming on to the show to show dialysis patients that they too can get a kidney. One has received, one's waiting to get hers, hopefully this month. I'm praying on that for Ms. Swarb. But compliance is key. And you see that both of these patients are well-versed on their medical background as far as eating healthy and making appropriate decisions for success. So again, thank you for showing your face and showing that there is life after dialysis. Rita.
Well, and I want to say thank you to both of you too for sharing such interesting stories, real stories that other patients can really relate to. And like I said, we need to be the captains of our ship. We need to take control of our health and be responsible. And if we're not doing the right thing, guess what? We need to do the right thing to get to our goals, which is our kidneys. If you guys want kidney transplants, and if that's not your goal, and if it's just your goal to be on dialysis, but be the best dialysis patient you can be, have a life full, full life. So yes, thank you so much for sharing all that with us. It will make a great change in our other patients' lives to hear it coming from you guys.
So Melissa and Ivy, before we leave today, what are your final thoughts for patients that have chronic kidney disease, but they're not yet on dialysis? What are your recommendations? What would you like to say to them?
I would like to just say know your body, because there are options with dialysis, hemodialysis, peritoneal dialysis. There's fistulas, AV fistulas, there's grafts. Know your body. I mean, I went with an AV fistula because things in my body tend to get pushed out. My body rejects them. So I knew not to get implants or grafts. So, we went with AV fistula and I went with hemodialysis because I'm also diabetic and I didn't want the extra sugar, peritoneal. So I would just say, know your body so that when you have to make decisions, you can make
warning signs
decisions. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And know what will work for you and what won't work for you.
Professor Jenkins.
I would say, again, pay attention, listen to your body. For those who are not on dialysis but are on the verge of going on dialysis, you still have a chance to possibly save your kidneys. And whatever that direction is that you're getting from your nephrologist and your team, follow that to the T. Don't be stubborn, as we all have a tendency to be when we get the news of the possibilities, or we get the news that we are headed for dialysis. Stubbornness is not going to help you. It's going to hurt you in the long run. But just pay attention, be obedient. And as Maria said, just be compliant.
Yeah.
I mean, fighting against this process is a losing battle, and we all want to win this thing one way or the other, whether that's getting a transplant or living with kidney disease if we choose not to do the transplant, or preventing it if you can, if you're not already on dialysis. So you just have to know where you are and act accordingly.
Yeah. And listen to your body, because your body will give you signs.
Yeah.
The warning signs. Well, we hope that you have enjoyed the show, and we look forward to you joining us on our next segment of Kicking It with Kidneys. Don't forget Instagram, YouTube, thumbs up. See you next time.
Well, that's it for today. Thank you for listening to Kicking It with Kidneys with your host, Cindy Barclay. See you next week. The views expressed on this podcast are educational and opinion-based. These are not medical doctors.
Be sure to catch us on social media on our website, kickingitwithkidneys.com, also on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube.